Cashflow Ninja, episode 210 with Jim Rickards.
Welcome to the Cashflow Ninja, the podcast empowering and inspiring people to discover how to generate their own income and manage, grow, and protect their own wealth in the new economy. Now, here is your host, MC Laubscher.
Hello, Cashflow Ninjas. MC Laubscher here, and welcome to another episode of the Cashflow Ninja. I have a great show for you today, and I'm honored to have Jim Rickards on the show to discuss many topics, including currency wars, financial warfare, the SDR, or as Jim calls it, the new world money, and the coming financial crisis that Jim wrote about in his new book, The Road to Ruin. Jim Rickards is the editor of Strategic Intelligence, a financial newsletter, and the director of the James Rickards Project, an inquiry into the complex dynamics of geopolitics and global capital. He is the author of three New York Times bestsellers, The Road to Ruin, The Death of Money and Currency Wars, and the national bestseller, The New Case for Gold. He is an investment advisor, lawyer, and economist, and has held senior positions at Citibank, Long Term Capital Management, and Caxton Associates. In 1998, he was the principal negotiator of the rescue of Long Term Capital Management, sponsored by the Federal Reserve. His clients include institutional investors and government directorates. He is an op-ed contributor to the Financial Times, Evening Standard, The Telegraph, New York Times, and Washington Post, and has been interviewed on BBC, CNN, NPR, C-SPAN, CNBC, Bloomberg, Fox, and The Wall Street Journal. Jim is a guest lecturer in globalization and finance at the Johns Hopkins University, Georgetown University, the Kellogg School of Northwestern, and the School of Advanced International Studies. He has delivered papers on risk at Singularity University, the Applied Physics Laboratory, and Los Alamos National Laboratory. He is an advisor on capital markets to the U.S. intelligence community and the Office of the Secretary of Defense, and is on the advisory board of the Center on Sanctions and Illicit Finance in Washington, D.C. Jim also launched a new company called Meriglim that utilizes his newest predictive analytics technology. Please share your feedback and thoughts on today's interview. You can let me know your thoughts on Twitter by tweeting me at MC Laubscher or by email at info@cashflowninja.com. And please remember to join our mailing list by signing up at cashflowninja.com or texting cashflowninja, one word, to 44222. To ensure you never miss one of our episodes, you can also download our free interactive smartphone apps on the Apple and Google Play app stores. I've created a Cashflow Ninja investment group where I share opportunities that I'm investing in with my fellow investors. If you're interested in joining this group, please email me at info@cashflowninja.com and we will continue the conversation to see if you're a good fit for our group. My friend Dave Zook says, you can be conventional or you can be wealthy, but you need to pick one. At The Real Asset Investor, Dave and his company create value for investors looking for higher yield returns from real estate ventures domestically and internationally. To learn more about the exciting investment opportunities The Real Asset Investor offers, such as the syndication opportunity at Mahogany Bay Village in Belize, or investment opportunities in the multifamily space in the U.S., visit cashflowninja.com/real-asset-investor. Gelt Inc. is a multifamily syndicator which has acquired over 6,700 apartment units valued at over $1 billion through a private equity syndication model. Gelt provides its investors with significant cash-on-cash returns while maintaining and enhancing equity invested for the long term. You can reach out to Joss Satin at joss@geltinc.com to learn more. Have you read Rich Dad Poor Dad? Are you interested in real estate investing and don't know where to start and how to get the results you want? For valuable information to get you started, visit JoinOps Properties at joinopsproperties.com. If you want to create an income stream of 8% on your cash or money in your self-directed IRAs within 90 days in real estate without finding the property, fixing it up, finding a tenant, and all the other management headaches, you have to watch the private lending presentation at cashflowninja.com/ private lending. The wealthiest investors on the planet know how to capture their wealth and leverage it to perpetually grow it. If you're interested in learning the premier strategies of the wealthiest individuals and families on the planet, you can access your free webinar at cashflowninja.com/be the bank. Jim, welcome to the show.
Thank you, MC. Great to be with you.
Now, I've shared in my intro a little bit about your background and journey and shared some of the highlights of your career and the projects that you've been involved in and continue to be involved in. And one of the things that I shared of you have served in the capacity of an advisor on international economics and financial threats to the Department of Defense and the U.S. intelligence community. And you served as a facilitator of the first ever financial war games conducted by the Pentagon. Now, since we've experienced currency wars and continue to do that, as you wrote about in your bestseller, Currency Wars, and now experiencing expanding trade wars that includes North Korea, can you please share a little bit with my listeners more about the financial war games that you were involved in? Very interested with that you conducted for the Pentagon, and also speak to the current financial warfare that we're experiencing right now.
Happy to, MC. Financial warfare, it's new and old at the same time, and let me explain what I mean by that. Finance and trade and economic aspects have always been a part of warfare. So you go back to the Napoleonic Wars, and the Royal Navy put up a blockade around France, so France couldn't conduct any import-export trade via its ports. And Napoleon responded to that by creating what he called the continental system. He said, fine, we'll just trade with all the countries in Europe, all the countries that are connected by land. We won't rely on the seagoing trade. But then Spain and Russia balked at that, and then Napoleon invaded Spain and Russia. So the economic was side by side with the kind of kinetic, the military or the imperial ambition there. Same thing come forward to the 1840s, 1850s, the Opium Wars with between the UK and China, where China was actually running a trade deficit with China. The UK was running a trade deficit with China. The UK had enormous appetite for products from China, whether it was porcelain or silks or other manufactured goods, but China didn't want anything from the UK. They didn't need anything. So the UK was running a trade deficit. In those days, you settled up with gold or silver. In this particular case, the Chinese had an appetite for silver. So silver was draining out of the UK into China. And Whitehall said, well, we have to do something about this. We have to balance our trade with China. By the way, a familiar refrain, this is all we hear today about, the United States and other countries worried about their trade deficits with China. Well, nothing new about that. The UK had one 150 years ago. So the UK solution was, well, look, we control Afghanistan. Afghanistan has heroin. Why don't we just sell opium to the Chinese? And they did. And the Chinese said, we don't want your opium. We don't want your drugs. Keep it out. And they sent the Royal Navy in to basically blast open the Hong Kong and other ports and force the Chinese to take the drugs to settle the balance of trade. So you had a drug war, a trade war, and a shooting war all mashed together. So my point is there's nothing especially new about this. However, in the 21st century, in the realm of asymmetric warfare, where you include not just, bombs and missiles and submarines, but, cyber warfare, psychological operations, drones, and financial weapons, it's taken on a whole new aspect where all these things are combined. And recently, General McMaster, H.R. McMaster, is National Security Advisor to President Trump, said, in military planning, we no longer make the distinction. In other words, financial war, kinetic war, shooting war, cyber war, they're all just on a spectrum of tactics and weapons that we use to win, to subdue enemies and maintain U.S. power. But we don't think of it as a separate category. It's just one more tool in our toolkit. And I think that's right. So what we did in 2009, we did the first ever financial war game. I was brought in as a facilitator, and then I was able to participate in the game itself. This was conducted at the Warfare Analysis Laboratory, part of the Applied Physics Laboratory, located at Top Secret Weapons and Research Facility, located between Baltimore and Washington, D.C. The Pentagon did not need any help from me in wargaming. They'd been doing that for decades. Where they needed help was on the capital market side. They needed to import financial and capital markets experts to help make the game realistic. And that was my role. And we had, it was kind of fun, because we were starting with a blank slate. As I mentioned, financial war game had never been done before. So, you know, what would the teams be? What would the scenarios be? How long should we do it? You know, 1 day, 2 days, 3 days. How should people take turns and what facilities would be available? We had to answer all those questions, and we did. And then came the war game itself, and I was able to participate on the China team, and I recruited a friend of mine to join the Russia team, and then we played it. And I describe all this in the first two chapters of my book, Currency Wars. This book came out in 2011, although it's still very timely. The currency wars are still going on 6 years later, which is something that I predicted in the book. I said, you know, we're not always in a currency war, but when we are, they can easily last 10, 15, 20 years. And I gave specific examples for that. So I'm not surprised that, you know, here we are 6 years after the book came out, we're still in the currency war. But the first two chapters cover this war game in great detail. But interestingly, the scenario that we used involved Russia and China stockpiling gold and then unilaterally declaring a new currency that would be issued by a bank in London. So they backed by gold. So they deposited their gold in the scenario. They deposited their gold in a Swiss bank. They created a new bank in London that would issue this new currency, and the currency would be backed by gold. But we knew that nobody would put their gold in Russia or China. You couldn't really trust them, and that neither the ruble or the yuan were ready to take center stage as a global reserve currency. But we said, well, if you create a new currency from a bank in London where there's good rule of law, and you put the gold in Switzerland where there's also good rule of law, people could have confidence in that system. But the kicker was that China and Russia henceforth would only accept this new currency. So if you wanted Chinese manufactured goods or Russian energy exports, they would no longer accept dollars. You had to pay for it in the new currency. And if you wanted some, you could get it through one of several ways. You could trade with China or Russia and run a surplus and earn the currency that way. Or you could borrow some. There would be a lending facility. Or you could deposit your own gold in Switzerland, and the bank would issue you some currency and join the club. Obviously, this was very forward leaning. It's not anything we thought would happen the next day. But of course, the whole point of a war game is to give the Pentagon food for thought, to help them think about the future, look over the next ridge line or the next horizon, and anticipate future threats. And that's what we did. Now, what was interesting about it is we pretty much got laughed at by a lot of the big brains who were there. There were people from think tanks and people from the Treasury, the Feds, CIA, uniform military, but also, you know, major universities. There was one guy, no need to mention him by name, but a big name up at Harvard, who just said, you know, this is ridiculous. Don't you know that gold plays no part in the monetary system? You're wasting our time with this scenario. We said, well, let's just play it out and see how it goes. And it took some interesting turns. Again, I talk about that in my book, Currency Wars. But here's the point. Here we are 7 years later, actually 8 years later, and what has happened in the meantime? Russia has tripled its gold reserves. China has tripled its gold reserves. And in other words, and China recently announced that they would like to price oil in yuan. That's their currency. But understanding that nobody has much use for yuan, that you could convert the yuan to gold through the Shanghai Gold Exchange and hedge the gold forward on the Shanghai Futures Exchange. Russia's exploring, digital cryptocurrencies, not Bitcoin, but, you know, their own currencies that they would control. In other words, the things that we warned the Pentagon about, the things that we talked about as important financial warfare tactics aimed at the dollar and jeopardizing the role of the dollar as the leading global reserve currency, are actually playing out. So I look back on that, again, it was 8 years ago, but we were, pretty forward-leaning. I think we did a good job of warning the Pentagon about what was to come. But having said that, financial warfare is more than just, you know, China, Russia, and gold. That's a big, big topic. It's playing out all over the world in many different ways.
Now, you've also talked about how the global monetary system has changed, continued to change, and changes about every 30 to 40 years. And another big event that you've covered in depth was on October 1st, 2016, when the IMF added the Chinese yuan to the special drawing rights basket, the SDR, which you have mentioned could become world money, replacing the US dollar dominance. How do you see this happening? Is this still something that you're monitoring and looking at?
I'm watching it very closely, MC, and it is happening. I don't consider this a futuristic scenario. It's happening today, but it's happening in small steps, and that's by design. Now, this is what Karl Popper and George Soros call a piecemeal engineering. In other words, they know the world's not ready to, you know, swallow a new global currency all in one bite, if you will. And so they do it a little bit here, a little bit there, and it actually plays out over sometimes decades and even generations. They may not even live long enough to see it, but they feel that they did their part to advance this agenda, and proteges and others who have been groomed kind of step in and take their places and continue this global elite plan. So, yes, I absolutely see it playing out along the lines we've described and talked about here. The SDR is world money. There's nothing new about it. SDR stands for Special Drawing Right. It's world money. They give it a funny name, so you won't know what it is. I point out that the Central Bank of the United States is not called the Central Bank of the United States. It's called the Federal Reserve. Well, that sounds like a brand of aged whiskey or something. I mean, it's kind of name designed to put you to sleep, but that's by design. The United States had two central banks, one in the late 18th, early 19th century, and one in the kind of mid to early 19th century. And both of them were abolished. Americans hate central banks. And so when it came time to start a new one to bail out the commercial banking system after the panic of 1907, and they created the Federal Reserve, the architects of it, the elites of the day, said, whatever you do, don't call it a central bank because Americans hate central banks. Call it the Federal Reserve and no one will have any idea what that is. And that worked pretty well. It's the same thing with the SDR. You know, I say SDR, special drawing, right? You're like, what the heck is that? Again, designed to put you to sleep, but it is world money. And I think people should understand it as world money. They should understand the International Monetary Fund is the central bank of the world. It operates today. It has an executive committee, but operates pretty much under the direction of the leaders of the G20. I consider them the board of directors of the world. All this sounds like some deep, dark conspiracy theory. It's not. It's very real. And I talk about this in my most recent book, The Road to Ruin, which came out in 2016. And, you know, that book has 150 endnotes. And these endnotes are not to, fringe websites. These are, you know, official documents, treasury documents, IMF documents, academic papers, et cetera. You can read it all, and you can just read the book and skip the endnotes if you like. But if you want to drill down, it's all there. But the point is, this is all documented. Now, getting back to your question about what happened on October 1st, 2016, the SDR has a basket of currencies associated with it, but the basket is misunderstood. A lot of people think it's backed by a basket the way you would back a currency with gold. It's not. The sole purpose of the basket is to determine the value of an SDR measured in those other currencies. So you say, well, okay, I've got one SDR in my account. What's it worth? Is it, you know, $1.30, $1.80? Well, the answer is today it's worth about $1.40. But the point is there's a mathematical formula for calculating that. You can also calculate the value of the SDR in euros or yen or other currencies. And that's what this basket is. It gives you kind of a benchmark for determining the value of an SDR, but that's all it is. Other than that, the SDR is fiat currency printed by the IMF in digital form, handed out to the members with no limit, subject to, you know, the approval of the executive committee or the G20. Now, having said that, it still is a prestigious thing to be included. Prior to October 1st, 2016, the members of the basket were the dollar, the euro, the yen, and pound sterling. That was it. You had four currencies. Today, there's a fifth currency. It's the Chinese yuan. And interestingly, the IMF had criteria for inclusion, like what does it take to be included in this basket? And they completely ignored their own criteria when they admitted the SDR, when they admitted the Chinese yuan. The yuan did not meet the IMF's own criteria, but they bent the rules to include it because China is the second largest economy in the world. About 10-11% of global GDP. It was the largest, fastest growing major economy in the world. It was just too important to ignore, and China was insisting on it and actually preparing to go its own way, do an end run around the IMF with the Asia Infrastructure and Investment Bank and the BRICS new arrangements to borrow and the BRICS Development Bank and other initiatives, all designed to put pressure on the IMF to give China more power. So finally, the IMF said, fine, we'll let you into this very exclusive club of ours. But bear in mind, it was a political decision that the yuan did not meet the normal criteria. But anyway, China's in, so now you have these five currencies. So they've joined this super elite club. But there's something else going on, which is going to play out over the next couple of years that's equally important. So I talked about the governance of the IMF. Like, what would it take to get the IMF to issue, $2 trillion SDRs, equivalent to, let's say, $3 trillion to bail out the global financial system in a new financial panic, because the central banks will be unable to do so since they haven't normalized their interest rates or their balance sheets. Well, you're going to need some approval from this executive committee, and that involves votes of the members. And the IMF has an interesting governance structure to do something really big of the kind we're talking about, such as issuing, trillion SDRs. You need an 85% vote. That's a supermajority. So, which means that if anybody has 16%, you can veto it, because if you have 16% and you don't vote yes, then everyone else combined cannot get to 85%. The most they can get, of course, is 84%. And so the event or the proposal doesn't happen. It fails. So 16% is veto power when you need an 85% supermajority. Well, no surprise, there's only one country in the world that has 16%, which is the United States of America. And we've always protected that veto power. But lately, the BRICS have complained bitterly. The BRICS together, the BRICS are, BRICS, Brazil, Russia, India, China, and South Africa. Collectively, they make up about 22% of global GDP, but they only have today about 14% of the votes, a little more, in the IMF. And so they're saying, wait a second, we're 22% of the global economy, but we only have 14% of the votes. That's not fair. And you look at smaller countries that have a larger vote than they do part of the global economy, countries like Belgium and some others. And so the IMF agrees with that. And the IMF has now started a process, and you're going to hear more about it next week at the IMF annual meeting in Washington, to increase the voting power of the BRICS. Well, the point is, the minute you give them anything, even a fraction of 1%, it's going to tip the BRICS collectively over this 15% threshold I just talked about. So no one country, including China, will have veto power, but the BRICS acting as a group will have veto power. So all of a sudden you have a unified counterweight. This is why these BRICS summits are so important, why Putin and President Xi of China and the other members, Prime Minister Modi of India and others, are continuing this BRICS dialogue and these BRICS meetings, because they know that with this new voting power, they'll have the same power as the United States to say no. So how does that play out? Well, the way it plays out is that in the next financial crisis, it's going to be bigger than the ability of the central banks to bail it out. And I say that because the central banks bailed out the last crisis, but they did it by lowering rates and inflating their balance sheets, and they haven't normalized. So their ability to cut rates is limited. Their ability to expand their balance sheets is limited. They're not going to have the ammunition, if you will, or the tools in the toolkit to bail out the world the next time. That will fall to the IMF, which does have a clean balance sheet, and that's going to involve issuing SDRs, and you're going to need a vote. Well, the U.S. will go along with it, because the U.S. has the most to lose if a financial bailout cannot be arranged. But the BRICS will say, well, wait a second. You need our votes. Together, we can vote no and defeat this plan. So if you want our votes, we have some demands. And one of them will be the elevation of the SDR versus the U.S. dollar as the leading global reserve currency. So there's a big game playing out here. A lot of it's technical. None of it is hidden. I like to say that the IMF is transparently non-transparent. And what I mean by that is they actually do put all the stuff on their website, but you have to be an expert. They speak in a dense jargon. They speak in their own language practically. There's a long history to all this. The SDR is nothing new about it. It goes back to 1969. But you have to be an expert to understand it. And most people who are experts are working for the IMF. I mean, they have no interest. Right. They have no interest in exposing this or calling them out. So, but it's all playing out kind of before our eyes, and it will come to a head in the next crisis. My advice to investors is get physical gold. Physical gold is the one thing that, you know, it can't be hacked. It can't be frozen. It can't be inflated away. It'll preserve your wealth and serve you well in the panic.
You're listening to Jim Rickards on the Cashflow Ninja podcast. We will be right back after a word from our sponsor.
Are you having a hard time finding great investment properties? Unfortunately, the best deals are rarely found locally. Successful investing begins with the right properties in the right markets. Norada Real Estate provides everything you need to invest in the best deals across the United States. Our simple, proven system will help you create real wealth and passive monthly cash flow. Learn how to find the best deals by downloading your free copy of The Ultimate Guide to Passive Real Estate Investing at noradarealestate.com. That's noradarealestate.com.
You're listening to Jim Rickards on the Cashflow Ninja podcast, and now back to our interview. As you mentioned, there's a lot of things playing into this. And for my listeners out there, I would highly recommend the Road to Ruin, the Global Elite Secret Plan for the Next Financial Crisis, and also the New Case for Gold that Jim had written. Some things playing into this as well, the war on cash play that we've seen out there, the rise of digital currencies. There's a lot of moving pieces. You've put a lot of this together, Jim, really, really nicely for people to prepare. I believe you've called it an everything bubble. So the next crisis is going to be a lot different. What would you recommend people do in preparation for this to protect themselves for what's looming ahead?
Well, MC, I've always recommended 10% physical gold. I think that's the right amount. I've had some people say to me, well, Jim, you know, if you think gold's going to go so high, and I do, why not 50% or 100%? My answer is that it's never, never a good idea to put all of your portfolio or a large percentage of your portfolio in one asset class. I don't care what it is. I'm a big fan of gold, but I wouldn't put that much into gold. But 10% is fine, and here's why. Because in the kind of panic and crisis I'm describing, which will come, gold is going to soar, not by, you know, $500 an ounce. It's going to go up $1,000, $2,000, $3,000 an ounce. Other things will be crashing, stocks, bonds, other assets. If you have inflation, your cash is not going to save you. And so you'll be losing on a lot of your portfolio, but you'll be making it up on gold. So it's not that you're going to double or triple the whole portfolio. It's more the case that the gold allocation will make up the losses in the other parts of the portfolio, and you'll preserve your wealth, whereas others who don't have the gold will be losing massively. As we saw in 2008, we got a little taste of that. But you know, if bad things don't happen, nobody wishes for that. I don't wish for it. I hope I'm wrong in my analysis. I just don't think I am. If things are calm and it's all good and, you know, gold just kind of moves sideways, well, you're not going to get hurt with a 10% allocation. But if everything falls apart, you'll be very happy you have it. Now, I recommend people do that now, do it today, for a couple of reasons. Number one, it's almost to the point where people have called me up and said, Jim, I hear what you're saying. I've read your books. I agree with you. It's going to really end badly, but could you call me up at 3 o'clock the day before? And I'll sell my stocks and buy gold. And my answer is, I'm not going to know the day before. I might see it coming. In fact, I expect I would see it coming ahead of a lot of people. I see it coming now. I've got the analysis and the analytic tools to understand this. But I'm not necessarily going to know the day before some particular catalyst comes along and starts the whole thing tumbling down. But it won't matter, because when that happens, you're not going to be able to get the gold. Dealers are going to be sold out. The mint's going to be back ordered. Big guys, London Bullion Market Banks and some mega hedge funds, they might be able to get some gold, but not anybody else. So it's, you'll be sitting there at home watching, TV, financial TV, CNBC or Sky News Business or whatever. And gold will be going up, $100 an ounce, $200 an ounce, $500 an ounce. And you'll say, get me some gold, but you won't be able to get it. You'll just watch it on TV. It'll be unavailable. So the time to get it is now. The other reason is that the price is being manipulated downwards, and people say, well, wait a second. Why should I buy gold if there's all this price manipulation going down and it gets, you know, slammed, and every time it goes up, it seems to go back down again. And my answer is that's exactly the time to get it, when the price is low. Now, this manipulation, the prime suspect, and I believe the party behind it, is actually China. And you'll say, wait a second, China has a lot of gold. Why wouldn't they want the price to go up? Well, the reason is that they do have a lot of gold, but they want more. They want to get to parity with the United States, which means 8,000 tons. It's hard to know exactly how much gold China has because they're non-transparent about it. But, you know, 4,000 to 5,000 tons of official gold is a reasonable estimate based on the evidence available, which means that they still need to acquire 3,000 or 4,000 more tons in order to catch up to the United States. Well, if you were out to buy 3,000 tons of gold, that's a lot of gold, by the way. That's equivalent to roughly 10% of all the official gold in the world. If you were out to buy 3,000 tons, would you want the price to be high or low?
Right.
You'd want the price to be low because you're a buyer. Now, eventually, when you've got all the gold you want, then the price of gold is going to skyrocket and you'll be along for the ride. But China has every reason to manipulate the price of gold downward because they're still acquiring it. So in effect, they're giving you a gift. They're giving you the opportunity to buy it at very cheap levels. And then, you know, my advice is if it's good enough for China, it's good enough for me. They're not dumb.
Absolutely. Now, Jim, a core message in our show is to leave our families, communities, and the world better than we found it by passing down a mindset, values, and principles to future generations, not just money. So if you cannot pass on any money to future generations and we're only allowed to pass on three principles to them to build wealth and achieve happiness and success, what would they be?
Well, certainly, you know, honesty and good character. You know, J.P. Morgan, the bank, has a bad reputation today. It's practically, you know, I call it the world's largest criminal enterprise. There was a person, J.P. Morgan, the man, who was, you know, the leading banker of the late 19th, early 20th century, and the House of Morgan was his bank, J.P. Morgan and Company. You know, the predecessor to the bank we have today, also to Morgan Stanley. J.P. Morgan said, he once had to testify before Congress after a financial panic. And they said, well, you know, how do you make loans? And he said, I make loans based on character. And he said, character, character, and character. He said, I wouldn't make a loan on, he said, all the bonds in Christendom as collateral if I didn't believe the person was of good character. So that's something that you carry with you through your life. And so just, you know, basic honesty, fair dealing, character, I would say are critical. You know, if you have that, the wealth will come. You don't have to go chase money. The money will find you if you're a person of that reputation. Certainly, traditional values, you know, God, family, patriotism, country, you can kind of wrap that up in a package, but those are things that serve us well. And the third thing I would say, you know, national patriotism is important, but don't forget community. And I mean your local community, your town, your neighborhood, your street, and all the civic institutions, not government institutions, but civic institutions, whether it's, you know, Boy Scouts or Girl Scouts or, your church or, you know, a community center, local politics or whatever. And, you know, a lot of these, so-called preppers, you know, they're preparing for some apocalyptic Mad Max kind of scenario. I'm a person who believes that there will be very severe financial and societal breakdowns. I think that will happen, but I don't, think it's the end of the world. I think life goes on one way or the other. So your typical prepper is, you know, dressed in camouflage with a machine gun, a sniper's nest, and they're in a cave and they got dried food and water and they're good to go. I don't think that's how you survive. I don't think that's how you'll get through it because you're a loner. The way you get through it is with a community, a place where, you know, there's a local farm and a farmer's market. And, you know, when I first started going to China in the early 90s, you know, almost 30 years ago, they had just started to liberalize the economy a little bit, and farmers were bringing their produce to farm markets in the big cities on bicycles. They didn't have anything that they have today, the transportation network and so forth. But, you know, there were these farmers. They had these three-wheel bicycles with a little flatbed in the back piled with cabbages, and they had their Mao suits on, their little Mao hats, and they were peddling into the city to sell their cabbages. Well, you know, find a town that has a farmer's market today on a Saturday or Sunday afternoon. Chances are when everything falls apart, they'll still have the farmer's market. They may use bicycles instead of trucks, but that's how you'll survive, by, you know, getting help from neighbors and helping your neighbors. So I would say those three things, you know, character, honesty, fair dealing, you know, God, country, and family, and a sense of community. They'll serve you well.
Very, very powerful. Thank you for sharing. Jim, how can my listeners learn more about you, all of the projects that you're involved in, your books, the newsletters, and stay in touch with you?
Thank you. Well, I have a new company where actually a lot of the science behind what I'm describing, we're working with IBM to put that in a predictive analytic engine. That company is called Miraglim, MERAGLIM.com. So people interested in that company can go to that website. My books are all available on Amazon. I'm very active on Twitter. My Twitter feed at James G. Rickards, with my middle initial G, last name R-I-C-K-A-R-D-S. So at James G. Rickards. And I have a newsletter, Strategic Intelligence, published by Agora Financial. So a lot of resources, books, newsletter, website, and Twitter. And I'm pretty active on all of them. So hopefully people will follow some of those and enjoy them.
Fantastic. And I would highly recommend that everybody check out Miraglim. And by the way, Jim, I really like the name. I believe it's named after the reconnaissance team that Moses sent into the Promised Land in a very, very noble mission to proactively identify the threats and opportunities that's out there that's going to stop a lot of bad things happening in the future. So highly recommend listeners check it out. Jim, thank you so much for your time. I really appreciate connecting. And thank you so much for coming on the show and sharing your journey and your knowledge and providing so much value for my listeners.
Thank you, MC.
This is MC Laubscher, the host of the Cashflow Ninja podcast. As you may know, I'm also the president and chief wealth strategist of Valhalla Wealth Financial. We help individuals, families, small businesses, entrepreneurs, and professionals build their wealth outside of Wall Street and help investors maximize the use of every dollar in their personal economy and boost their investment gains. We do this by combining the capital and investments with the financial vehicle of the wealthy according to the infinite banking concept. If you're interested to learn more about privatized banking and the infinite banking concept, you can access an exclusive webinar at cashflowninja.com/be the bank. Thank you for joining my guest, Jim Rickards, and myself on the Cashflow Ninja today. Many of our listeners have taken action and received a personalized game plan of how to collapse time in their financial plan and become financially free in 10 years or less. If you're interested in a personalized game plan and custom roadmap to achieve financial freedom in 10 years or less, you can register for a free webinar at cashflowtactics.com/ninja. If you like what you hear and appreciate what we're trying to build here at the Cashflow Ninja, please subscribe, rate, and review our show on iTunes and share our show with family, friends, and your network. I'm always trying to learn and improve in every area of my life, so if there's any way that I can provide more value for you and serve you better, please reach out to me at info@cashflowninja.com. If you're not a subscriber to the Cashflow Ninja Gashku newsletter, you can sign up for our newsletter at cashflowninja.com or text Cashflow Ninja to 44222. Gelt Inc. is a multifamily owner which has acquired over 6,700 apartment units valued at over $1 billion through a private equity syndication model. Banking on the renter revolution amongst millennials and baby boomers, all-time low home ownership rates, and a major shortage of well-located apartments at affordable price points, Gelt has provided its investors with consistent cash-on-cash returns while maintaining and enhancing equity invested for the long term. For more information on how to achieve sustainable yield for the long term, you can email Josh Satin at josh@geltinc.com. Smart investors know that the banks actually don't own most automatic teller machines. In fact, the opportunity for private investment provides stellar passive returns, figures in the double digits, with the added bonus that most of the income is tax-free. Who wants to walk blindly past an ATM and not cash in on that opportunity? ATM machine ownership brings you a steady stream of hands-off passive income. Dave Zook and the Real Asset Investor team have been providing opportunities for investors in this uptrending activity of ATM use. If you're an accredited investor and would like more information on how you can invest in this exclusive asset class that very few investors will ever have access to, sign up for your free webinar on how to create income streams from ATMs at cashflowninja.com/real-asset-investor. Jimmy Freeland and Bob Scott have been in your shoes and have used real estate investing to become financially free. They've designed a system to take any beginner to an experienced deal-making investor in the least amount of time. They offer opportunities from basic education, coaching, bridge loan investing to turnkey investments in the cash flowing market of St. Louis, Missouri. For more information, please visit joinopsproperties.com or call Jimmy and Bob at 314-799-2247. If you want to create an income stream of 8% on your cash or money in your self-directed IRA within 90 days in real estate without finding the property, fixing it up, finding a tenant, and all the other management headaches that comes along with it, you have to watch the private lending presentation at cashflowninja.com/private-lending. The wealthiest investors on the planet know how to capture their wealth and leverage it to perpetually grow it. If you're interested in learning in the premier strategies of the wealthiest individuals and families on the planet, you can access your free webinar at cashflowninja.com/be-the-bank. That's our show for today, everyone. Until next time, live a life of passion and purpose on your terms.
You have been listening to the Cash Flow Ninja with your host, MC Laubscher, the podcast empowering and inspiring people to discover how to generate their own income and manage, grow, and protect their own wealth in the new economy. Today's show notes and resources are available on our website, cashflowninja.com. This presentation is for educational and informational purposes only. The information being presented and considered does not consider your particular financial objectives or situation, and it does not make personalized recommendations. This material is not intended to replace the advice of a qualified tax and legal advisor or other qualified professionals, and you should not use the information in place of a customized consultation with a licensed professional regarding your specific personal financial objective, situation, and needs. We believe the information provided is reliable, but we do not guarantee its accuracy, timeliness, or completeness.